7, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead. Well, hello, Todd.
Hello, John.
It's you and I today. We got Greg's off someplace. Maybe we'll get lucky. He'll call in.
Well, I hope so, because he's going to miss out on a good show. Why is it a good show? We're speaking to you on April 3rd, and less than 3 weeks from now is going to be MRO Americas and the Aerospace Maintenance Competition, where we're going to be enthusiastic about all things aviation maintenance. But what we're talking about today is something that doesn't give me a lot of enthusiasm: the fact that there has been and continues to be both a shortage of mechanics and demand for mechanics. Now, the shortage is bad for a whole bunch of reasons, but it's good for one reason. If you're entering the profession, you're coming into a profession that's going through a transition. As John was just telling me off the air before we started the show, there are a couple of major airlines here in the U.S. where the average age of mechanics are in the mid-50s. What that means is, realistically, 5 to 10 years from now, a lot of those folks will either be out of the business or in parts of the business that are not as demanding on the body. And things like, as you were telling me, John, they might be transitioning to working in the shop as opposed to working in the line, and working locally as opposed to volunteering for things that take them far afield to repair airplanes that are broken out in the field. What does that mean for people who are up and coming? Opportunity.
Yeah, it's as you get up in years, climbing an airplane like a monkey and standing on your head and crawling through all those crawl spaces in the belly of the airplane and in the tail, it gets for younger people. More agile, more rubbery in your joints. As you stiffen up, that gets to be a little difficult. And the airlines, within 6 years ago, it was 50% of their over 10,000 employees in the maintenance department. So they're in a hiring spree that's going to go on for the next 6 years. And so they're hiring up a lot of people. And that's a two-edged sword now, what's happening. It's because we got a lot of kids that are coming out that partied hardy, and they can't pass the drug test, and we don't want them in the business. So they've shut themselves out, and they can work in Disneyland or Six Flags or some of those places, because if they have the skills, even though they can't pass the drug test, well, in some of those places, there might be drug tests there too. I don't know. So that could be a problem. But in any event, the schools historically have not been putting out enough maintenance people. Schools are now gearing up. There's been a number of changes to help them get more people into school and out as certified mechanics, but it's catch-up time. And the effect of all that is far-reaching. You know, the bigger operators, the bigger airlines, the bigger repair stations, they have pretty big workforces now. That means they're going to work more overtime if they're shorthanded. So, and there's a lot of overtime going around the business right now. So they'll get by. But what has happened is so many people have been sucked out of the general aviation community as mechanics to go after the airline because they pay much better. Some people stay in general aviation because they don't like the working conditions, because normally you're going to start an afternoons or midnight shift and be stuck there for a while. And maybe you might be working weekends for a while too. So some people don't want to do that and they'll stay in general aviation. But for the most part, many, many, many of them have left general aviation to go to the airlines. And now what are we seeing? We're seeing the demise of the local repair station, the mechanic in a shop on a small airfield, in the shadows of a major operation, a major big city airport. So you might be 30 miles away and working his butt off and looking to get something a little better financially. Nobody wants to buy his business. He'll just close it up and go to work for somebody else, or he'll retire and go out the door and nobody will buy his shop. He'll close it up. And now the general aviation airplanes are forced to go someplace else to get the work done. And usually that is the MROs that cater to both the business aviation and the maintenance, the smaller airplanes. And historically, the smaller airplanes have filled in the peaks and valleys for the maintenance work at the bigger organizations. But now with so many business aircraft out there and big airplane owners and things like Honda Jet and people are getting bigger airplanes. They're going into those facilities, those MROs. And MRO, by the way, stands for maintenance, repair, and overhaul. So they're going into those facilities. And now the little guy with the Cessna 172 has trouble getting his airplane fixed in a timely manner. They'll go into a facility and it'll sit there for 2 months or 3 months and not even be touched. And it's out of time, so the guy can't fly it. So it's getting to be a dangerous situation for little airplanes. And that's the backbone of our flight training. So we lose a whole bunch of little airplanes out of there because they're out of time for maintenance. And now it hinders the flight training, which is also in demand today.
Now, my next statement, I'm aiming more at the demographic of people who are entering the business as mechanics, folks who are under the age of 30, high school age, or just out of high school. You might ask yourself several questions, and two that come to mind is like, oh, gee, what if I'm, handy with tools and very enthusiastic? Can't I just show up at somebody's company and train myself up? Well, yes and no. A mechanic has to be certified by the FAA to do virtually any job involving an aircraft. That takes formal training. It could happen in the military, it could happen in the civilian world, but there is a certain educational component to it and certain tests and requirements you have to meet before you can become a mechanic. You might also say, all right, so there's an issue with mechanics. Well, won't AI take over this job? Yes and no. AI will be in every part of every business, just like computers and search engines are now. But what it can't replace is the actual act of maintaining the aircraft. You might have AI helping you out. You might have AI managing your workflow, but AI is not going to turn the wrench. AI is not going to make game time decisions. AI is not going to work with other people to solve complex problems with small airplanes and large. This is a job that's not going to go away. Oh, by the way, the airplanes that are out there, just because things might be a little tight with maintenance or fuel costs doesn't mean that the airplanes are going to be trashed. The airplanes that are out there now will likely be out there 10 years from now, 15 years from now. And the key to having them staying out there is to have mechanics working on them. And while there might be some issues with those who are right on the economic edge or the financial edge when it comes to operating an aircraft, the bigger players, the airlines, large corporations, they will still need those aircraft. They will still need those mechanics.
And if there's a shortage, they'll just pay whatever whatever the number is to get the number of mechanics that they need. So the pay rates are up pretty good over the last several years because there's been a shortage. So that's the answer for the big guys. It's just pay more, they'll get what they need. But that doesn't help GA a lot. I mean, I watch it, my competition. When you do, both of us are there. And we watch the students that come in and how many of them have left jobs. I know we've gotten over 1,000 people jobs out of that competition, I mean, they get hired right there on the floor. I mean, even the airlines that don't support us, typically Delta Airlines does not support the competition. They don't let any of their employees come to the competition to compete, right? But their human resource people are at the competition passing out employment applications or giving them the phone numbers to call in. So, and they're not stupid. None of those HR people are stupid. The schools that send their students to compete send the best students that they have. So if they're sending the best six or seven students, five compete, the alternates, you've got seven of the best students from whatever school is there. Why not pick them? If they can meet the qualifications for the, you know, the drug testing and employment qualifications, why not hire them? You've got an employee that's already been identified as above average. Well, then why not grab them? And that's what the airlines that are there, that's exactly what they're doing.
About how many hundreds of younger people, that is, folks who are in aviation schools and military people who might be on the verge of getting out, about how many hundreds of those will be at the MRO conference this year in Orlando?
Last year we had somewhere between 900 and 1,000. So we had a big crowd. We're standing room only. We're totally full, chock-a-block full, and we got people waiting.
And
I
for
mean, a
those of
year
you who
ago
aren't.
we had 30 teams waiting, and a team is
Wow.
five people, and you don't come with five, you come with six or seven. Some of them come with 10. All right, so they bring the essentially instead of just bringing the seniors, they'll bring the juniors to watch the tests because they'll send them next year, so that they
Now,
have a leg up on the competition. So we know that's what we're doing. We change it up to try to level the playing field and all that. But we see what's coming, and frankly, I'm happy because I also see a lot of the old gray hairs or no hairs like me mentoring these young kids and helping them through the process. So that mentoring is very, very important to all of us. You know, I was lucky that I had a couple of mentors when I first hired on.
you
So
mentioned juniors and seniors, but in fact, most of the A&P schools, airframe and power plant schools, it's a 2-year or less than a 2-year program,
it's
high school.
2,000 classroom hours, essentially. It's that 1,900 and something. They just call it 2,000 hours. So
And
that's a year. That's a working year.
this is an education which, and I say worst case is you might have to pay for it out of pocket. But the cost of 2 years of education at an A&P school is typically much less than 2 years of education at a 4-year college, especially a private 4-year college. And side story, a good friend of our family, they have a child who's going to college, and she's a very hard worker, and she's going to a very decent university, which has all-in cost, tuition, travel, etc., of about $100,000. She worked hard enough to have a full ride scholarship, which is a great benefit to the family. Now let's go to A&P schools. There are some, like the one, the name escapes me, in Cape Cod, which is part of the junior college system in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. There's no tuition to go there.
Right.
And that's not the only A&P school that's like that.
There's a number of them around the country, but this one in Massachusetts, they get lucky because they were part of the state community college system.
But
Yeah. So
here's the
if you're a
bottom
resident of
line.
Massachusetts or you move here for a few months and then you're a resident, you can go to school for free.
You're going to do something out of high school. Doesn't matter what that something is. It could be going to college, it could be hanging out, it can go and be going into the military, or it can be in an A&P school. Now, very few of the options you can do for 2 years of your life right out of high school could put you in a position to be in a six-figure or near six-figure job on day one.
Yeah. Well, there's a little ramp up. They don't pay you the big bucks day one, but you know, there is a ramp up. It's rather quick too. And if you like computers, today's airplanes are nothing but computers. I forget how many computers they have on Airbus. It's not just a computer box, but a lot of the components have computers. There's multiple computers running the engines on the airplane. You know, just the fuel control. On a the latest engines, it's all electronic. So, if you want to be a electronic specialist, there's all kinds of work there too. So it's emerging because we're making changes with the process because of the shortage, essentially. But if you get your certificate, it's a license to learn. You can get in and you can do, you can do a lot. Hey, I went, I grew up in the city. I went to school to be a mechanic because I needed to do something. I was 18 years old. I finished in 19. I went to work first in general aviation and then with the airlines. And let me tell you, I've traveled around the world fixing airplanes. I mean, sometimes I didn't even want to go where they were sending me because it wasn't the best place, but I've gone to Bermuda. I've gone to some pretty exotic places to fix airplanes. And when they're fixed, I don't necessarily come back on them on that airplane at that time and get to stay sometimes a day or two. So it was an interesting career. Hello, aviation enthusiasts, safety professionals, and curious minds. Welcome to Flight Safety Detectives. We are thrilled that you dropped by. Here, we dive deep into the world of aviation safety. From incident investigations and technical analysis to lessons learned and what they mean for safer skies. As a member of our channel, you get exclusive member-only perks. First access to new episodes, live stream discussions, and Q&A sessions. We are a community of fellow safety detectives who love aviation as much as you do. If you're passionate about aviation or just curious about how things work, we'd love to have you on board. Hit join, ring the bell to be notified, and jump into the discussions in the comments. Strap in. Because together we're going to explore aviation safety like never before. There's some things I always wanted to do. You know, the missionaries that are in Africa and in South America as well. I always wanted to work on missionary aircraft and go around helping people in remote areas. I never made that. But that was one of the things that early on that I would have liked to have done. I got married too early to do some of that stuff.
Well, if you get married too early or married too late, either way, if you have a solid job, solid income coming in, you can afford to do either choice. But more to the point, if some of you listening out there, you're thinking, okay, I just stumbled across this podcast. You're talking about aviation mechanics like it's the greatest job in the world. It's a great job. It's a great career. I'm not a mechanic, but I've been around them because I've been in aviation all my adult life. But one of the problems, which is an opportunity for those who are in the A&P schools, one of the problems we have in aviation is that those who have this kind of training and these kinds of certifications are valuable in other industries. For example, you ever heard of a place called SpaceX? They hire many, many, many people from the aviation world. Amusement parks. You think, what about amusement park? What do we need a mechanic for? Well, you've seen these rides that fly at 100 miles an hour and go 300 feet in the air. They're maintained by people who aren't necessarily aviation mechanics, but those with that kind of training are often sought after by that part of the entertainment industry. And there are several other industries where, again, you have this kind of background. You have the ability and the smarts to work around hydraulics, electronics, mechanical systems, etc., complex processes like factories and production lines, and aviation.
You know, my I had a big class of 70 students when I went to school. And out of that, only five of us ended up in aviation as mechanics. So interesting things happened along the way. Right at the end of the school year of the whole program, right, like 30 days or 45 days from the end, Gillette, the razor blade manufacturer, has a big facility here in Boston. And they hired, I don't know how many, a lot of my students that I was in school with. Come to find out, talking to some of them later, the reason why they hired them all is when they make razor blades, it's not one machine. It's a series of machines. So when one machine finishes whatever it does on the blade, and I'm picking these words now because I don't know what they do, but on the blade, that blade has to go to the next machine that puts it in the plastic. And that transfer has to be timed. The machines have to be timed. Engines on airplanes at that time, most of them were reciprocating engines, they need to be timed. Mechanics understood how to time mechanical devices. That was just one example. They would run by pneumatics that would move the goods from one machine to the other. We need to know pneumatics and hydraulics to work on airplanes. So the skill set that we had, all those guys went away. Also at the same time, we had Xerox just put a big facility in the Boston area. I forget where it was now. And they must have hired 20 guys to service their machines and offices around Boston. So they gave you a car, trained you, put you with some tools, and you went around all the offices and other facilities maintaining their machines, photocopying and printers and other stuff.
Now, some of the younger folks out there, especially the demographic we're looking for entering the EMP industry, you might say to yourself, "What's a Xerox?" Well, in a previous era, Xerox was one of the biggest tech companies of the day, and Xerox machines were everywhere in all sorts of offices. Right now, we have scanning machines for scanning documents, and we have a lot of PDF files and such. Many of the functions that Xerox had were taken over by other technologies. However, the skills that the Xerox mechanic had, I'm sure would have been applied to another industry had Xerox gone away like dust in the wind. Now, speaking of which, what's going to happen in the future? We don't know. However, for those of you who watched the video version of this, we have a graphic up on the screen from Oliver Wyman, which is a business that does a lot of forecasting within the aviation world. And this is a somewhat complicated graph, but I'll help you along there. The darkest line in the middle is basically the demand for North American aviation mechanics in the next 10 years or so, next 5 years or so. It shows the demand is pretty flat. I think that's pessimistic. But they also say this: how many people are going to come into the business? They have a green line saying, "Hey, it's going to be really, really good. A lot of people coming in." A red line saying, "Hey, it's going to be really, really bad. Not enough people coming in." And then the gray line, which is basically the most likely case. Bottom line, except in the most optimistic case, there will be a consistent undersupply of mechanics. Now, why is that? Well, three main reasons, one of which is the aging of the population. A good percentage, and I think we talked about this earlier, of those who are active A&P mechanics right now will not be, well, likely not be in the business or in a different part of the business 5 to 10 years from now. They have to be replaced. Utilization of aircraft. In spite of the current troubles economically around the world, the demand for aviation is growing around the world. Just looking at big jet aviation, the airliners. When I was a kid, China was not the China we see today. There were very few airliners in China because the demand wasn't there. The country did not have the economic power to do that. Fast forward to now, they're the biggest aircraft market for airliners in the world. Compare that with India, which is way better than China was 50 years ago, but the potential to have hundreds of millions of more people flying on airliners is going to be big in India in the next 20 or 30 years, which means they will become probably the biggest purchasers of aircraft. Now, how does that affect you if you're listening to us in North America? Aviation's a global business. If you have a demand for aircraft around the world that's increasing, that means the demand for all the services and all the skills around aviation will be increasing. What else is going to affect the shortages? Training. We talked about the A&P schools. We talked about the military schools. they're going to be growing to meet the demand. However, there's still going to be a gap, definitely in the short term. I'm not sure what the gap will be in the long term. It depends on how these schools grow, how many more of them are created, and whether or not there are more creative ways to properly train people to go into this business. But in general, what I'm saying here is this is an industry that will have a shortage of certain kinds of talent. If you have that talent, you will have more options than if you don't have that talent.
Yeah, I got friends that worked in and went to Singapore and worked over there for 20 years. And Saudi Arabia is another one they went through. And I taught school in China for a number of years. I taught school in India for a number of years, aviation maintenance subjects. So, I mean, there's all kinds of things that doors that open with this certificate that you can get from the FAA, because it's just not enough people to satisfy the needs in an industry that's growing like crazy. They haven't even touched Africa and South America for the, China and the Far East have gotten all the growth for the last 25, 30 or more years. All right, at some point, they're going to peak out and it's going to shift to either Africa or South America, and that'll be another boom town down there. And you know what? One of the things that's driving this boom in those areas is we built roads from the 1900s on. So roads became the lines of communication between all the cities in the United States and in Canada and in a little bit in Mexico, South America. But the rest of those countries, you go south from central Mexico, the roads get pretty thin. And as their economies start to grow up, they just can't support commerce. So they need to find some other ways to move the goods that they're going to make. And it's either going to go by air or by boat, because it's not going to go over the road. By boat, they need to build harbors and docks and all the rest of it. So at least in the beginning, it's going to go by air. And oftentimes, once it starts by air, it doesn't transmit to something other form of transportation. So it's just all sorts of things. And let me mention the railroads. I once was after an accident, a railroad accident, when I was at the NTSB, and I was the board member for the accident. I was riding in a train, a freight train, with the three people in the front end, the guy driving the train, the vice president for Burlington Northern Railroad, and myself. And you got a lot of free time when you're riding in the front end of a train. We're just talking. And where it was an accident that was on the downhill side of a long downhill side and a long train. And so we're chugging towards it and just talking. And in a break in the conversation, the guy driving the train turns around to me and says, "Are you an A&P mechanic?" I said, "Yeah." And I was a little surprised that he knew what an A&P mechanic was. And then his follow-up was, "I am too." That was a little bit of a surprise to me for the train driving the train, at which point the vice president chimed up and said, "And I'll hire everyone I can get." He said, "I can teach anyone to drive a train in a week. I can't teach them hydraulics, pneumatics, electrical systems, which the guy who drives the train has to understand." Right? So he's looking for somebody with the skills that A&P mechanics have to have them drive a train. That is also a very good paying job. So, I mean, there's just so many doors that open for somebody that has that skill level.
Now, to take advantage of the interest I hope we're generating from this conversation, I want to invite you, whether or not you're an aspiring A&P mechanic or not, to join us by either asking us questions. FlightSafetyDetectives@gmail.com. Send us questions, send us comments, tell us what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, or tell us whatever you want to tell us. You're a organization that wants to put your product or service in front of our audience, especially folks who might want to be A&P mechanics, write to us at fsdsponsors@gmail.com. And also importantly, you can join us by becoming a formal member. If you're looking at the graphic that's on the screen, you go to the YouTube channel, you hit the join button, join at the level that is appropriate for you, that you will enjoy, and you'll get perks like first crack at some of the shows that we do, being able to see our live broadcasts that we have, and other benefits to be determined later.
You know, and if you want to, you know, parents that are out there, if you one of your children come to you, and because they heard this podcast and if you want more information or just want to get some basic information, go to our website for the competition. I run the skills competition. Todd is part of it. We got a bunch of other people. We all volunteer our time to help the younger people into this field. Aerospace maintenance competition. There's a ton of videos there, ton of information to let you see what it's like. It's just, we have a ball with the competition. It's a lot of hard work, but we have a ball working with the kids. I just wish they would share some of their energy, but that's another story. But it's a lot of fun. So if you're interested in it, email us. We'll tell you where to go, where to get more information. Because we've been helping people transition into the business for over 12 years. I think this is the 14th year, 15th. I lost track. It's been a while. How's the saying go? An equal opportunity employer? The aviation industry has been lacking color for a long time. That has changed. And I mentioned earlier about the people that we've helped get jobs. I'm proud to say that over 150 women have gotten jobs through the competition. So barriers are being broken down pretty often now in aviation.
In an aviation mechanic world, pilot world, the technology world in general, the strength that you need is the strength between your ears. Don't think you have to have some, burly linebacker kind of body to do this job. Not at all.
Yeah. It's not like working in a tire shop, back breaking, breaking down truck rims and truck wheels. It's a lot different today. Yes, there are some jobs that require heavy lifting, but not a heck of a lot. And in the bigger facilities where you do heavy work, they got all kinds of equipment to do the heavy lifting for you. The heavy lifting is between your ears, making sure that you understand the airplane, understand the system, and can efficiently troubleshoot. And this it gives a bottle of pride when an airplane comes in that isn't working right, and you figure out what it is and get it going. So it's, I look back on my career and I'm not sorry at all. In the beginning, people sort of didn't like, my family didn't like the direction I was going, but over time they changed their mind. It's a good job.
And I think this brings us to my second to last word, which is going to be talking about what we're talking about repeatedly, the aerospace maintenance competition. This year it's going to be in Orlando, and we have the dates flashing up on the screen. Next year, I can't remember which city we're going to be in. Where are we going to be in
In
20?
Orlando, we're in Orlando for 2 years.
Oh, 26 and 27.
And
Very good.
28, we're in Chicago.
Very good. And if you're in Orlando, it's not that far from the Kennedy Space Center. So you can enjoy the competition, maybe check out the Disney type entertainment, take a short drive over to see the rocketry, get inspired by all kinds of technology in the same place.
I missed the when you talked about AMPs in the space system. I missed my opportunity. A few years ago, I wasn't watching it. I got told to watch. But when SpaceX launched their first people on their airplane, they had a camera on the gantry. They climbed in and they did all the preparing they could do. When they were ready to go, closed the hatch. The person who closed that hatch competed 2 years earlier at the competition from a school where he got his A&P license. And here he is up on the gantry, closing the hatch on a SpaceX capsule going up. So when we say it, that really that's the future, the jobs, the sky's the limit. We're not kidding. We're not kidding. This thing, this point in time, so much opportunity, so much. My granddaughter is married to a mechanic, Air Force mechanic, who just got out. They live in Ohio. He just came back from 3 months of training in California to work on unmanned vehicles. So, I mean, it's just, you just, the opportunity is so large, we can't even talk about it all on the show. Just if you got an inkling, look into it. Finally, the guidance counselors in high schools are finally catching on to the opportunity. For years, they didn't have a clue what this profession was available to them. So please, if you think it's just something for your kid, your nephews, whoever, have them look into it. Have them give us an email. We'll talk to them. And for all of you pilots out there that may have listened through all of this, which I'm not sure there's many that went all the way to the end, please, please fly safely.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. We really value all of our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you. So if you like this, give us 5 stars inside your podcast platform.
We want to keep the conversation going with you. So we'd love for you to engage with us on our social media channels. We're on Instagram, X, Facebook, LinkedIn, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetothetexas@gmail.com. By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're working on growing this channel, and it really helps if you all comment. So please do that. We read them all.
And be sure to subscribe.
For decades, Avemco Insurance Company has been an advocate for pilot safety by promoting and sponsoring continuous pilot training and education. One of their initiatives has been to reward pilots who actively participate in being more proficient with savings on their insurance premium through the Avemco Safety Rewards Program. Pilots save by earning new ratings, getting recurrent training, participating in the Fast Team Wing Program, and listening to podcasts like ours and other Avemco-related courses and training. Call 888-879-0389 for a free quote or visit avemco.com/flightsafety. Don't forget to tell them the Flight Safety Detective sent you for an automatic 5% off.